You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
What happened at the motel?
You don't know, I tell you. I was working security by Wisconsin. And on Tuesday night, we heard gunfire coming from the area near the Algiers. Police was there. There was a lot of shooting. When I went in there, three kids had been killed.
No. So they were killed right before you got there.
Sir.
You carry a 38, right?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kel Smith. Joining me this week is Brandon Cooley.
Hey, everybody.
And this week we are going to be talking about Detroit. There, as far as the Dark Tower is concerned, I think we are going to save that for the Youth Critic React, since A, the people I know that saw it are really busy at this moment, and so I'll just publish a React video for the Dark Tower and a ghost story. However, my just quick thoughts, quick little preview is, it's mediocre. That's all I got to say for it for now. But let's get into Detroit, Brandon. So, Brandon, starting with you, what did you think of Detroit?
Just general thoughts. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen a few movies by Catherine Bigelow. I think the only ones I've seen are Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. And I would say this is definitely her best movie out of those three. Even though it takes place in 1967 and during the Detroit riots, it is filmed like a war movie. It's filmed like her previous two films. Has that feel to it. Yeah, I thought it was just about perfect in every way.
Yeah, my general thoughts are this was a compelling, hard-to-watch movie. It almost at times could teeter on the line of exploitive. However, I felt like the direction was so compelling, and the writing was very, like, it was close to, I mean, it's close to how you would think 1960 people would talk. It's like the direction, the writing, and the attention to detail is so, and it's so, like, it's just such a well-done movie. Even, you know, I mean, a lot of people are talking about in this movie about the Algiers motel scene that kind of goes on for like an hour and 15 minutes. For me, it wasn't just the Algiers motel scene that's just well-directed and poignant, and basically how, even currently, how police brutality is still a thing, you know, or currently how we have a perception of police brutality. And you know, it's not just that scene, it's, you know, the beginning with, you know, the riots starting out and the animation that opened the movie and then the court case that concluded the film. All of that, you know, built in an environment that I found really compelling and very timely and kind of put together, like, as you're kind of putting the pieces together, like, why this movie, why you're trying to figure out why would Catherine Bigelow do this movie, you know, set it in 1967 in the backdrop of the Detroit riots, why would she tell that story versus something like, why not go into the Michael Brown story or any other, like, piece?
Well,
it's basically to say.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, it's basically to say we're still kind of dealing with this trouble, this, you know, problem even today, 50 years later.
Yeah.
You know,
unfortunately, this will be a review where I'm going to review the critics' perspective on this, not so much the movie, because I take a huge issue with people, with critics who say that it's exploitive, like a horror movie. If they feel that way, they shouldn't have watched in the first place, in my opinion. I mean, this is historically accurate, from what I can tell. And
well, it's their to be fair to the critics, it's their job to review this movie. It's their job.
They shouldn't watch it if they can't handle that kind of content. I mean, historical movies deal with this kind of stuff sometimes, you know, and there's nothing in it that's exploitive, I think. It's what happened, you know. You can't really soften what the blow, you know, the kind of the impact that it has. And to compare it to a horror movie, I mean, what happens is horrific, but I mean, it doesn't share very many qualities to horror movies. I mean, it's suspenseful, I guess, in a few scenes maybe, about what's going to happen next, but it's not the same kind of, the setup is so much different than a horror movie, you know, the ending and the context of it, I think. But
I'll argue this. You know, I mean, yes, it's not like Friday the 13th or Scream. You know, violence is, you know, very heavy, and, you know, and there's, you know, a heavy dose of sexuality in there, and there's the, you know, and it's not like, you know, slasher movie horror. It's not like how we perceive horror today. It, you know, the kind of horror that I think people are talking about is more of a psychological horror. So it's a kind of horror that, you know, that just, you know, it puts you immersively within our characters, our victims of the story. And, you know, and that's what's so horrifying about it, is that, you know, despite everything that happened to our characters, there's still no justice. And I think that's a more horrifying idea than in a mass killing you.
Yeah. I just think that putting a label on the movie as being exploitive is, for one, it's rare. I can't think of very many movies that are exploitive except for the Saw movies, maybe, which I haven't even seen, for the record. I can think of very, very few movies that are exploitive.
It's been a while, but I've seen I would think of Crash as sort of exploitive. But then again, it's been a while since I've seen that movie.
That's just a poorly written script, I think. But I would say it's exploitive. But I can't think of very many. And I just think that, especially for a movie that's historical like this, it would have been a disservice to the people, historically to the people involved, if they had censored any of this stuff, I think. I have a problem with labeling something exploitive when it's just accurate, personally.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand that perspective, but then again, after Selma and after so many movies like Detroit, there comes to a point where it's just like, well, when does it become too much? When does it become too much? When do we go, okay, we get it. We get the problem. And let's find other ways to solve it. You know, let's find
This is about something much different than Selma. And I would argue this is much better than Selma, because Selma is censored. It is PG-13 to appeal to a wider audience. It's not really that focused as well as this movie is. In terms of the similar movies about the subject matter, I would say that this reaches the level of Straight Outta Compton. And it's better than movies like Selma because of that. It takes a much more direct approach to it. It's more focused, and it's and what it's about. But
I understand, and I mean I understand, and Detroit though, and we kind of talked about this after the movie, and you know, for you and for us, I feel like. I think I think we've seen enough of these movies to where if we go any further, if we go more heavy on the violence and more heavy like to the point where it becomes, you know, almost NC-17 level, I think it will start to get exploitive, or I have the fear of it will become more exploitive. And when something like this does become exploitive, it kind of, I forgot the term, but it like, it kind of just, you know, it kind of blows up in your face as a filmmaker. And it kind of, you know, has, you know, kind of a, you'll get a pushback reaction from if it becomes too exploitive. And I feel like there is a little bit of a pushback from Catherine Bigelow and Mark Bull, but I don't know if it's completely justified.
It's not justified. I mean, this is just something I feel strongly about, because I think people are getting too sensitive these days about what's in their, about what kind of content's shown in movies. And I mean, I asked about if what counts as a exploitive film. I can think of one film I've seen that's exploitive, and it's a very obscure foreign film. I just can't think of very many movies, especially historical films, are exploitive. I mean, it's just not, I mean, either it's accurate or it's not, you know, it's not exploitive. I mean, right. And in terms of other movies, like about similar subject matter, I mean, I can't think of very many more they can make. I think that they should make a movie about the Rodney King riots, what happened there at some point in the next couple years. But that's the only story I could think of that they could make a movie into. And that should be rated R too. That should be a similar, you know, invoke a similar feeling as this movie. If they were to make one like that.
Mm-hmm. The only other like thing I could say about Detroit that might, it's more of an observation than a negative, but I feel like this could have benefited being longer.
Yeah.
Like I would like to see, you know, like the People versus OJ Simpson.
Yeah.
I would like to have seen more of a mini series about this, because I would have loved to seen like more like detailed, you know, I would like to see more like details like of what's happening in Detroit. And I feel like, I mean, Catherine Bigelow, she tried to cram as much as she could by focusing in on the Algiers Motel, and for a feature it works, but I feel like for a movie that's supposed to be about the Detroit riots, yep, you kind of get away from that after like 30-40 minutes of end of the movie.
Well, it's about the Algiers Motel incident. I think it's about the Detroit riots. It takes place. That's the setting of it. Mm-hmm. It's really the plot.
Right.
I mean, I saw the O.J. Simpson miniseries last year, and I loved it. I thought it's probably better than all the movies that came out last year. But the thing with that, though, is that was the court case. If she had done the court case as a miniseries in this, I think it would have flashed back to the hotel incident. And I can't – I'm not sure if that would have worked as well. Maybe if it was the first episode, then maybe, and then it was the court, maybe that would have worked, but it's hard to say.
Well, let me propose this. What if it did start with like the court case, like proceeding, but what if it's like an episode, but what if they dedicate a whole episode or two to the whole Algiers Motel incident?
Yeah, that could have worked. It's hard to say. It's because that's kind of what the O.J. Simpson show did.
Oh.
They focused two episodes on the actual murders and the car chase with the Bronco, and then the other like 7 or 8 episodes focused on the court case. So yeah.
Right. And to me, I found that, and I don't know if you agree, but I thought the court case was more, actually I found, maybe it's because of what we had seen and what we have taken in by that point, but I found the court case way more compelling and way more like, and the entire Algiers Motel sequence. Because it, I mean, like this is heck, because I mean, it's so poignant and it's so like it does, there, like it doesn't shortcut, it doesn't have a happy ending. Like, this is what happened. This is, you know, how it worked. This is how it happened. And it all logically makes sense. Like it all makes sense, because, you know, going to the court case, I mean, I don't think I've ever told this story before, but my grandmother was on a jury, mm-hmm, for a murder case, and they were, you know, that she was looking for was like, you know, like what was the, you know, past of the, Brandon, help me out here. What's the person that's being the accused? What's the past of the accused? And
the defendant.
Right, or the offended. Mm-hmm. and like, and what is the, you know, and what is the past of all the witnesses? Like, what's the credibility of the witnesses? What's the credibility of the evidence? Like, they're looking for, like, you know, jurors are supposed to be looking for the credibility in everything. So when the movie, you know, goes to the court case and you have John Krasinski's character attorney, basically kind of, you know, I don't want to say demonize, but, you know, showcase that they had showcase their criminal past of each of the witnesses and each of their association with the police, basically dismissing their opinions, dismissing the character's opinions or not opinion statements of, you know, what happened at the Algiers Motel, causing kind of the, you know, what looked like an all white juror to essentially dismiss all of the witness testimonies coming up, leading up to a non-guilty verdict. Yeah. And sorry for spoilers, but this is a historical movie.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention the spoiler thing.
Well, it doesn't hurt there's not really spoilers in this because it's history, but well, I thought it was both compelling. I mean, both the actual scene in the hotel or the motel and the crime, the court case were compelling. I thought one wouldn't have worked out the other. So I do think that that John Krasinski was miscast as the lawyer, because I just kept imagining Jim Halpert, and that, I mean, he plays Jim Halpert for some reason. I don't know. I guess he doesn't have any range for some reason, which is too bad, because I always liked John Krasinski in that show, but that felt kind of out of place. But that's one flaw against otherwise just about perfect movie. So it's not with, because it's very minor. But
are you oh boy, I'm now like blanking on the term. Are you like I'll come back to it in a second.
Okay.
I forgot the term.
What is it like? What's the?
It's like you see someone on like a mobster show quite a lot, and typecasting. Sorry, that's what it is. Are you typecasting John Krasinski?
I guess so. Well, the thing is, I haven't seen him besides The Office. I think he's been in other movies since then. I haven't seen the Benghazi movie. I'll have to look it up though while we're talking, but. It just seemed out of place. I don't know why. It just seemed kind of jarring to have him walk in the, like, I don't know. It's let me look it up real quick. What else he's been in? But
I mean, I get it, and I was kind of joking, but you know, but my opinion on Kransky's, I mean, he's only in the movie.
Yeah, it's very brief.
10 minutes.
Yeah, it doesn't really even matter. But
And he is in Benghazi, which I thought he was really good in. I thought he was really good in Benghazi. Shocker that something decent could come out of a Michael Bay movie nowadays.
I just refuse to see the movie. I just had no interest in seeing Benghazi. So the 13 hours.
I get it. But yeah, he's not in that much other films or work. He does. Currently, he's on doing the Jack Ryan show.
Oh, okay.
For Amazon. But yeah, I mean, John Krasinski, I mean, I thought he was fine. I mean, he did the part the best, you know, as well as he could. He looked the part. He, you know, he's tall and intimidating, and and he doesn't like smile. I mean, he plays the role the best way he could have been directed. And so I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
As far as like the other actors, like what did you think of John Boyega? Because I thought he gave one of the best performances of the film.
Yeah, he did a good job, given what the role was. Because his role is, it is complicated. It is would have been a complicated role to fill in. Because, I mean, essentially, you know, he's a cop trying to, like, I really don't know what I would do in a situation, given, you know, when he walks into the motel and sees what's happening. It's you do put yourself in his shoes and you're thinking, what would I have done in this kind of, you know, in this with the incident. And yeah, it's interesting the way he plays the role. I thought the best performance was probably Will Poulter, as, cause he was very convincing as that kind of that racist cop who doesn't know, he doesn't even think he's racist. It's just this weird, like, twist on that kind of character. Cause it easily could have been really like sinister and really, two dimensional, you know, that kind of, that kind of villainous role. That,
yeah. And that, I don't know if it's the eyes or just the eyebrows, but he, every time you just look at his like eyes and the, you know, and his brow like moving up and down, it's creepy. It is terrifying. Like there's a shot in the trailer where he just looks at you know, one of the girls in the hotel room, and he just gives like a high brow look. And it's just like creepy as hell.
I mean, yeah, he almost smiles at him, I think, in one scene. It's a creepy expression. Yeah, it's just, it's effective. Yeah.
Yeah, and you and I were talking about this, but he was almost Pennywise in the new It movie. And I can definitely see it now, how that could have worked.
Yeah, I can too. Yeah. I mean, he's a bit young to play Pennywise, but with the makeup, it would probably work really well. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's tall enough to do it, and he's not that much older or younger than the guy who's currently playing it. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at the time, I was thinking of Tim Curry, but that was a more comedic performance, not necessarily like frightening. So, if they're taking it in that direction, it would have been fine. But.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Not to get off track for a second, but it doesn't really matter with Penny. It doesn't matter like what age Pennywise is. I mean, obviously he needs to be tall and intimidating, and so he'll have to be an adult age.
Yeah.
But really, you know, as long as he's tall, intimidating, and looks like a, you know, or a creepy clown, then who cares? I mean, even Bill Skarsgård right now looks way more terrifying than what Tim Curry did.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah.
So going back to Detroit, I don't have much more I can say on the movie other than it's just, you know, so well, it's very well directed. And all I really can comment on, it's very well directed, very well acted. And I need to see more Catherine Bigelow movies. Actually, I have a colleague of mine that on a piece about like one of her earlier movies, Near Dark.
Yeah.
And the more I hear about Near Dark, it's like a vampire movie that kind of jumps through different kinds of genres, like a Western, then horror, then drama, then comedy, and then back to drama. I mean, it just sounds really compelling, and I need to see that. I've only seen parts of Point Break, so to catch up on my Catherine Bigelow. And this movie just, again, proves – yeah, I need to get on the Catherine Bigelow train, which I'm already am. I loved Zero Dark Thirty, and it took me a while to get on board with Hurt Locker because I think this was just a maturity thing because I was like 15. But I now put that in. That's one of the best movies of that decade of the last decade.
Oh, really? Well, I've always liked it. I never thought it was like a great movie by any means. I always thought it was pretty good. I thought Zero Dark Thirty was an improvement on Hurt Locker. And I thought this is probably an improvement on Zero Dark Thirty. So they each got kind of better.
Zero Dark Thirty has a narrative. Like Zero Dark Thirty has a narrative, whereas Hurt Locker is just these three guys are doing different things throughout the film.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, both have narratives, but I mean, the Zero Dark Thirty was just a more compelling subject matter, I thought. Just the idea of the... just the idea was more interesting than Hurt Locker, you know. Personally, I thought, but
right. So, what else can we say about the Detroit? Because all I really can say is it's really the movie is poignant in that it showcases like what is happening today, but through the lens of 1967, but in through, you know, like, and also, you know, there's this great performances. The Algiers scene, it's intense because you just feel for these characters. You want to go home just like they are. And you are just, and from I know in reviews mentioned that you'll be asking at times like wondering, well, why didn't the characters do this or why didn't they try this? For me, I just always knew in the back of my head that no matter what, like unless the characters actually let them go, they were always going to be screwed over.
Yeah, I mean, there's no moment where like you assume they could have done something they didn't, or like, you know, they mess up like they do in horror movies that, you know, like, yeah, there was a moment like that. In terms of like, do you think this will get Oscar attention at the end of the year?
It's tough. I mean, it's tough to say right now because it's August. And also, if looking ahead at like what's coming out later this year with, you know, I mean, we have a lot of like, all of them like the Oscar calibrated directors. They're all, you know, a lot of directors like Paul Thomas Anderson, Steven Spielberg, Darren Aronofsky, Denis Villeneuve, like a lot of people are like releasing their movies this fall.
Yeah.
So even George Clooney is releasing a movie this October. So
yeah, Suburbicon. Yeah.
So it's just going to be tough. And also this, we don't even know the movies that are going to be like, we don't know what movies like are going to be like the TIFF wonders, like Spotlight was or Moonlight was. We don't know what those kind of movies are going to be yet. So it's a little hard to tell, even though I would love to see Oscar for John Boyega and a Best Directing nomination for Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. It is hard to say because I guess it is kind of crowded. I think it probably will have some kind of presence in the Oscars, but because I think it is going to be well-remembered throughout the year. But
Also, I want a nomination for sound design because the sound design in this movie is incredible. It just, you know, immerses you. Like, you just feel like all the shotgun blasts around you.
Yeah. I still can't really notice the difference between good and bad sound design, or like when it like is better than usual. Like, I'm still like never, I know the importance of sound in movies because, I mean, having worked on movies, you do notice that when you add in more sound effects and more Foley noises you get, but it feels adds more depth to a movie. But yeah, whenever those categories come around Oscar time, I just always kind of, I never know what to think with those or what should win. So
neither did the Academy voters. There's a lot of good movies that have good, great sound that never get nominated.
Well, I'm pretty sure that category is only voted on by the actual department that handles sound. Not the overall, like, I don't think all the Oscar voters vote for best sound design. So I think they would know, but I'm not sure. I mean, the only movie I can tell like the sound design was amazing is stuff like Star Wars, like the original Star Wars, because they created those sounds like from nowhere. Like there was no other sound that could like, they basically created it, you know, it was something new, but I can rarely tell
them. For me, sound design is kind of like directing where it really is all about how do you utilize sound? I mean, how do you utilize sound in the scene and the impact it makes? Because let's take the scene where Jack Reiner's character accidentally murders one of the kids.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say accident as much as he stupidly kills one of them. Like he doesn't realize that they're playing a game, a very torturous game with these characters.
Yeah.
Or with these kids. And so he shots one of them. The way sound works and the way it anticipates and the way you're anticipating the shotgun to happen or the shotgun blast to happen, where the sound kind of goes in and out and actually even gets quieter as that scene progresses to the point where you don't hear that much more. The dialogue gets more muffled and more quiet. And then the shotgun happens. That's really good sound editing.
Yeah.
Like, well, I just really,
for me though, I mean, the sound needs to be there at some point. So it's not, I'm not sure if it's about like, I just, for me, I never really noticed the sound being better than certain movies over others. You know, it's just not something I noticed, but except for a few, but yeah.
Hmm. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, Oscar wise, I wouldn't mind seeing this get nominated, but again, like pretty much the last few years, it's just been crowded and it's getting even more crowded. I wouldn't be surprised if I struggle with my top 10 this year. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, yeah.
Because already, I got more.
What? Go ahead. Yeah. No, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll say this. You know, it's a first world problem to create a top 10 list if it's struggling. But yeah, still, it's like, you got to put together. But still, already this year, I think I have way more A ratings for movies than pretty much any other. Like, I don't have a lot of Bs. I think I have a few Cs in there. And I think I only had one movie this year that's garnered an F so far, which is incredible. Usually I see a lot more crap by this point.
I mean, last year was awful. I mean, anything will be better than last year, I think. So hopefully we'll get better. Because even like last year, the nominations, the only one I would have thought should have been nominated was Manchester by the Sea. I mean, I didn't like any of the other films that were nominated that I saw, at least. There are a few I didn't see. But so hopefully it'll be more like 2015, less like 2016, hopefully. But
yeah, and even this year we got some really nice blockbusters that could be Oscar nominated. So, like this one and Logan and... Yeah,
hopefully Logan. That's the only one I would nominate in terms of blockbusters.
Right. I mean, I technically call this a blockbuster because there's a lot of action and this... I mean, I consider a lot of the outside stuff, like what's happening outside the Algiers Motel, very set-piece-like in terms of how it was staged.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not like action beats happening every second, but the little action there is, like, it really does. It is really action suspenseful.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, this is probably the third best movie I've seen this year, behind Logan and John Wick 2. Where does it rank for you? Or do you have like a ranking in your mind? Or like,
not right now. I mean, my top 10 is all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
you see quite a few movies, so yeah.
Right. Well, in last year, you know, I mean, even last year, I could make my top 10. Like, if I had to do a top 10 this year so far, it was a lot easier because either the movies were mediocre or they were, you know, not up to par to be on the top 10.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a good first world problem to have because, I mean, this year's roster of films have been so really good. Like, it's been really good, especially for movies like this, like Detroit and Get Out and the comic book movies and so on. So it's been a good year so far. So with that said, Brandon, do you have any more final thoughts on Detroit?
Not really, no.
All right. My final thoughts are I recommend this highly. However, just know that the movie is trying to be historically accurate and trying to be faithful to the story to the events itself. And even at the end of the movie, before the credits roll, it does put a disclaimer saying we can't possibly retell an exact account of what happened. We're just having to piece together from eye testimony and witness testimony. We're just using the sources we have to make this movie possible. And So just go in, like, they're trying to make the, they're trying to be respectful. And I think they are. I think, you know, this movie doesn't end on a, you know, celebratory racism is over. It doesn't end like that. It doesn't end in, you know, in that faction. It tries to be pointed and it tries to be fair to as many of the characters as possible, and even has a, you know, strong ending. But with that said, though, I would like to see more movies. I would a lot rather see more movies like Get Out, where it is like a horror, I don't want to say fun, but it does comment on, you know, on African American culture and what it's like to be, you know, in African American, an African American individual in, you know, in a white culture, in a white culture, not white dominated culture, and also I would like to see more movies like Black Panther that we're going to get later this year, and I would like to see more representation in movies going forward, where we do see representations in culture, and to see like to get more people comfortable. And well, if they're not comfortable already, then, but to get more people into, you know, into familiarity, into, if that makes any sense, Brandon. If I want more movies that just, you know, where a black person can say, that's, you know, that's more of my life. That's more of what I see in myself. And that's what I want, or I can see this moral figure more in me more than this other moral figure.
Yeah. I mean, I really like Get Out. That's one of my favorites of the year so far too. But it's not necessarily like, it's a much different type of movie in terms of the social commentary.
Sure.
Cause the social commentary is a very minor part of it for me. It's much more of just entertaining horror film. Or it's a thriller,
it's,
you know?
Well, it's also a satire as well.
Yeah, it's satirical. It's an episode of The Twilight Zone, or as I joked around, Goosebumps. You know, it's not necessarily a movie with a strong social commentary. You know, it's not that kind of movie, so it's different. But
I debate it is, but that's a different podcast that I've had months ago. So, yeah, go see Detroit, and it's. And Brandon, you still don't have Twitter handles, right?
No, I never do. Never have.
Okay. I always feel obligated to say it because I know almost, because I feel obligated to ask.
Okay.
So you can follow me on Twitter at Movie Kale, and you can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow KHC Network, the channel that distributes this podcast, at KHC Network. Please check out and follow the Youth Critic Twitter page. This is where you can get information on the podcast and updates on when the podcasts are going to come out. And as far as other podcast episodes concerned, Michael Benton and Philip Shaburn from the In the Can podcast, we just finished the World According to Garp podcast. That's up right now. And you can also check out right now, you can check out my React video towards The Dark Tower and David Lowery's new movie, A Ghost Story. So check all those out. Leave us a comment in the section of iTunes and Podbean. Tell me how we're doing. And that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to be talking about Begrudgingly, but also I hope this movie really does work. Annabelle Creation. See everybody next week.
It was quiet for all these years. After Samuel and I lost our daughter, no! We prayed to see our girl again. The contact started small. Then she wanted permission to move into the doll. We soon realized it wasn't our daughter. So we locked it away. house could be our penance.
This is our new orphanage.
Wow, it's as big as a castle.
But we ended up giving it just what it wanted.
You need help?
I can manage.
Sister, you always say that even though we can't see God, we can feel his presence. In this house, I feel a different kind of presence. An evil one. It's coming after me. Because I'm the weakest.
You help me?
What do you need?